This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Remember when we talked about a novel coronavirus? Because the term COVID-19 hadn't even been invented yet? And all of a sudden, public spaces and businesses and schools began to close, and people began getting sick and dying from this mysterious virus. Well, back then, KCRW reporters were out in the region covering drastic changes to many, many lives. That was 6 months ago. Can you believe it? Yeah, time flies when you're quarantining. So how are you doing? You can reach out to us at kcrw.com/greaterla to tell us. We also wanted to check in on some of the folks that we talked to on the show early on and see how they're doing right now. Deanna Duketok is co-owner of Los Angelitos Panaderia. It is a bakery in Huntington Park. Well, back in March, she made a pledge to the students of Los Angeles that her bakery would give free sweetbread to every child 13 and under. This is what she told us back then.
So at this point, we're pretty much going to offer it until we can't, you know, or we find out the LAUSD does allow the kids back to school. Or if they don't, then it'll probably run until the summertime.
And as you know, LAUSD schools remain closed for the rest of last year. And then here we are in a new school year, and students are still learning online. KCRW's Danielle Chiraguayo first reported on the bakery's free bread giveaway, and she's with us now with an update on how the bakery is doing. Hey, Danielle.
Hey there, Steve.
So first things first, has Los Angelitos survived, and are they still handing out the bread?
Steve, I'm actually happy to report that yes, Los Angelitos is still up and running, and they are still continuing this free pan dulce program. When I caught up with Deanna this week, she told me that she was serious when she made that commitment to hand out free pan dulce until kids were back in school full time. As you mentioned earlier, LAUSD is still doing virtual learning, and it doesn't necessarily look like we'll be going back to in-person instruction anytime soon.
Being around for 28 years, we provide a lot of the feeling of home for a lot of people in our community. Being able to walk down the street or come around the corner and grab a pan dulce, something that they've shared with their grandparents or with their parents. During a time that we're in with the pandemic and everything that's going on, especially in Southern California with a lot of the protests, I feel like a lot of people can come in and kind of find a happy place.
That's a lot of bread, Danielle. I mean, if you think about how much bread that they've handed out, right, to keep people happy, it's got to be expensive, especially in the middle of a pandemic where, you know, it's squeezed that business.
Yeah, you would think so. In terms of how much bread that they're getting at, Deanna doesn't have an exact estimate so far. Staff at the bakery have actually kept track by writing down the names, ages, and schools of the kids who come in through their doors. She tells me that they've gone through an entire 100-page Spiral notebook. And as for that cost, Steve, Deanna tells me it's been pretty cost neutral. Each piece of bread costs anywhere between 35 cents and about $1.30. So when families do come in, Deanna's noticed that families will actually buy some milk or water or even some extra bread. So at the end of the day, all that cost sort of just evens itself out.
You know, Danielle, the pandemic has hit so many small businesses so hard. How's business at the bakery been?
It's actually been pretty unpredictable. Deanna says that even on the day-to-day, she has no way of telling what's going to come next.
It's been a roller coaster. So sometimes, some days and some weeks, we're at a high, we're doing well, we're super busy. And then other nights, some days, it's just really slow.
That being said, it hasn't just been about the bread at Los Angelitos lately. Even though their business is struggling like a lot of others, they started to actually fundraise for local kids. That includes raising money last month for one local high school student to buy a new laptop and a subscription to Office 365. And as for the future, they already have plans to start another fundraiser next month.
Right on, Danielle. Some good news, obviously, amid the pandemic. KCRW's Danielle Chiraguayo. Danielle, thank you.
No prop, Steve.
Well, another business story that we covered back in March, the dire straits facing locally owned independent movie theaters. Late last year, Peter Ambrosio and two friends bought the Lumiere Music Hall. It's the only commercial movie theater in Beverly Hills. Now, everything was going well for the first-time theater owners until the pandemic hit. At the time, Ambrosio was a little nervous, but thought the virus would be all gone by May.
Yeah, we're we're staring into the abyss right now. So it's a pretty intense moment for sure.
KCRW's Angel Carreras recently talked to him and brings us up to date on how the local movie theater business is doing.
Peter Ambrosio is hoping grants and loans can keep his Lumiere Music Hall Theater whole till next March, when maybe the virus will be enough under control for audiences to come back. If Ambrosio doesn't get more loans or some kind of money, the Lumiere Music Hall will shutter. Their lease is up at the end of the month. And other theater owners aren't sure how long they can keep things going. I talked to Lance Ospaugh, owner of the Vista Theater in Silver Lake and also the Los Feliz 3. At the beginning of the pandemic shutdown, he was concerned, but not panicking.
Over the years, I've kind of planned for, I guess the best way to call it is a rainy day. Well, I guess, you know, the rainy day has come.
Now, Vermont Avenue, the street Ospaugh's theater Los Feliz 3 is on, it's kind of bustling as businesses open in a limited capacity. There's a packed patio for the vegan burger place that flanks the theater, and the taco place on the side has a line. But Ospaugh's tiny three-screen theater sits abandoned.
Originally, I thought it was going to end in July, like July 31, originally was the target date. But I don't know when it's going to end anymore.
To survive, he has had a dip in that rainy day fund, and even after doing so, says he still accrued, quote, several thousands of dollars of debt. And even if LA County allowed him to reopen at 25% capacity tomorrow, Ospaugh says that wouldn't make ends meet. It's basically been loans, federal, private, and grants, and dipping into those cash reserves that's kept his theater and others alive. And when that money runs out, if it runs out, all he has left to cling to is hope. Here's Ospaugh, and if he'd throw in the towel anytime soon.
I'm not a quitter, so I wouldn't quit easily. But you also, you know, you don't know. So you have to also know when to get off stage, don't you? You have to know when it's time to say goodnight, and that hasn't come for us yet.
And Greg Lemley, third-generation owner of the Lemley chain of art house theaters, is hanging in there, too. He put his entire business up for sale last summer, then opted not to sell. He's now looking at selling one of his theaters just to stay afloat right now. He told me back in March when the pandemic hit, he had to cut his staff from about 200 to 2. After just a few weeks of closure, he had this to say.
Yeah, you're hemorrhaging, you know, probably in the order of 20 to 30,000 a week. Loss.
And now?
I don't exactly know, to be quite honest. I'm trying not to look. You know, we're just trying to focus on how do we pay each week's bills, and how do we, you know, get to the light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, we seem to be managing that.
To bring any kind of income in, aside from loans, the Lumley Theaters is selling popcorn. You know, go buy it from the theater, take it home, eat it while you kick back and watch Netflix. And he entertained the idea of doing some sort of outdoors kind of screening too, like, you know, as drive-ins are making a big comeback. But the costs didn't really pan out. And despite all this, it sounds so bad, all the theater owners expressed optimism for the future. I'll let Greg Lemley wrap it up here.
You know, when the all clear is given, I hope everybody that, you know, feels that they can reasonably, you know, put themselves in that kind of situation comes out and sees a movie, whether it's at Lemley Theaters or elsewhere. But this industry really does need your support. It would be a sad society if we've all retreated to our homes and can't get together in public and enjoy something like a movie.
Movie theaters still trying to find their way through this pandemic, as obviously a lot of folks still are. A lot of folks like high school seniors. The pandemic hit them right at a crucial moment in their lives, prom season. Well, last April here on Greater LA, we talked with some of those seniors. And Angel Carreras is back. He checked back in with a couple of those whose lives were upended, but not entirely derailed.
Well, prom didn't happen for any of the students we talked to, unfortunately. And all these rites of passage were kind of a wash for most of them. Except Reza Shamji. He was a senior at Brentwood High School. He helped organize his prom, so it was kind of a bummer. But at least he did get a pretty sweet graduation.
We had to drive to Riverside, as that was the only place where gatherings were allowed. So we drove an hour and a half, 2 hours away from where we all live. Got to this spot. It's so awesome. It was a huge area. And basically the speeches, everything were on the stage where the movie theater, like the screen would be. And you get out of your car when it's your time, you walk up, and you were able to socialize with people, which was pretty awesome. So it was great.
The pandemic also upended his life in another way. He got accepted into both Harvard and Princeton, but decided not to go. He's taking a gap year instead. Why go to an Ivy League when you're stuck in a dorm room on a laptop? He got into investment banking for a bit. Yeah, investment banking. Harvard kids, am I right? And now?
I started thinking about it, and I thought maybe it's time to reach out. So I reached out to like 7 to 10 people in politics, and I didn't think anything would happen out of it because it's so close to the election, but I really wanted to work on the campaign. And it was like at that time, it was 80 days away from election date. And then I get a call, and I got an internship with the Biden campaign, and I'm working for the Texan Coalition head for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and we're trying to flip the state. So it's pretty awesome.
Another student whose life was pretty anxious back in April is Ashley Lewis. She was a senior at Long Beach Poly High School. She was headed to Cal State Fullerton on a basketball scholarship, and we talked to her the day Cal State Fullerton decided to put all their classes online. Here's what she said.
So I found the right college for me and the place where I would be able to improve in sports, and then like both of it gets taken away so quickly, it's really disappointing.
Today, the academics are still online for the fall semester, but good news for Ashley Lewis's basketball career. She just found out basketball will be back on campus October 5th. They're going to start with weight training and phase into actual basketball drills and practice. And games start around Thanksgiving. Kind of an NBA bubble situation, strict, no fans. But it's a relief for Lewis. I asked if she was excited.
Definitely. Feel like we've been waiting for so long just to get any news about going back on campus and playing basketball. But now that it's here, I'm very excited. I'm just, you know, ready for what the future may hold.
And whatever the future might hold, whether that's a new way of going to college, seeing movies, helping the community, college basketball bubble layups, let's hope the next 6 months are much brighter than the last. For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Outdoor dining has given a lifeline to restaurants that have been unable to serve people inside during a fast-spreading pandemic. And with necessity being the mother of invention, here's what you do as owner or manager to survive. Move as many tables as you can from inside to outside. Sometimes that's a parking lot, maybe a parking structure. A lot of times it's a sidewalk. Well, those sidewalks also serve as pedestrian thoroughfare. If you are able-bodied, it's not much of a problem to shimmy through the diners or go around. But if you're in a wheelchair, well, it can present more of a challenge. David Radcliffe is a writer. He's written about accessibility issues on LA's already broken and buckling sidewalks. And he has a few things to say about alfresco dining on those sidewalks as well. David, welcome to you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You use a wheelchair. What are you finding when you're navigating sidewalks around Greater LA these days, now that restaurants and eateries are placing diners outside?
Yeah, I do. I use a wheelchair. I have cerebral palsy, so I use a wheelchair or crutches depending on situation. And I really have to think ahead now, probably more than ever, about what sort of version of myself is going to be most able to navigate these spaces. Because I think, as you mentioned, a lot of businesses are thinking first about customers who don't have disabilities. And a lot of places don't think of us as potential customers as well. Besides the fact that of the disabled people in this country, we have disposable income of $490 billion. So it'd be awesome for businesses to think about us as potential customers or business owners. And often what I'm seeing now in areas like Los Feliz, Silver Lake, and in Studio City, where I lived until a week ago, a lot of restaurants are pulling their tables out and blocking us. And during a pandemic, that's potentially very scary because I'd like to be in and out as quickly as I can.
Of course. I mean, and so I guess my question to you is, when you're trying to, you know, manipulate through this area on a sidewalk and you've got diners in your way, what do you do?
Usually I would have to wait like in this particular case that happened most recently, I had to wait behind the table that was then being cleared out and wait for a restaurant worker to move the table for me. So it's a little humiliating at times, or certainly inconvenient in the moment. And you just have to hope that the business owner is attentive and responsive, because otherwise you could be sitting there for several minutes without access to the sidewalk.
And it's really, I mean, you don't want to go into the street. A lot of times there's parallel parking on the street, so you can't even get to the street, right? I can imagine how difficult that would be with a wheelchair or even on crutches if you're trying to get through the cars, right?
Right. And as I try to remind people, disability is the only underrepresented group that everybody joins. So whether through age or illness or accident, this is going to be a part of your life. And I'd like to see people think about it sooner rather than later so we can all build more equitable spaces.
What are the rules, David, about blocking sidewalks? There are laws, right? Or ordinances in cities where you can't block a sidewalk.
Right. And I'm not a lawyer or in public policy, but I can say that the ADA is a law, not a suggestion. But what unfortunately happens is that the onus of responsibility then falls unfairly on the disabled person to go around and remind the business that the ADA is a law.
Well, we looked it up as well. And in California, I mean, yes, the Americans with Disabilities Act has been around for 30 years. In California, it is illegal to intentionally block the free movement of another person on a street, sidewalk, or other place. Are you talking to restaurants about this? I mean, because here we are in the middle of a pandemic, they're trying to survive in any way that they possibly can. Restaurants are on the brink right now. So what are they telling you, and what are you telling them?
I find that what's challenging here is that on both ends of this, there's nothing malicious, and we know that restaurants have business to run. But you know, the challenge for disabled folks is we don't want to go around raising legal issues all the time. We just want the same kind of access and opportunity to be a customer as everybody else.
Do you think restaurants are thinking about that when they're setting up the tables outside? No,
not at all. When it comes to disability in general, whether you're talking about representation in media or access to businesses, most people don't think of it unless they themselves are disabled or they have a family member who is. And that's part of the challenge too, is you know, getting folks to think about this stuff before it becomes an intimate part of their lives. And very often, you know, I post about disability issues on Facebook and Twitter that I experience in my day-to-day life. And what's interesting is that friends of mine, once they become pregnant, they start reaching out to me in private messages and say that they, now that they are pregnant, they recognize a lot more that they didn't see before, the importance of having close parking or, you know, equitable spaces. So being disabled or having a significant physical disability is like being pregnant all your life. So we just need people to think about it that way and think about how to make their spaces as accessible for everybody as possible.
David Radcliffe, a member of the Writers Guild of America West and with the Think Tank for Inclusion and Equity. David, thanks for talking to us today and shedding some light on this issue.
Thank you very much.
Let's move on now with KCRW's Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Art. Art, oh, art. It has mainly been an online experience as of late, and it may continue to be, obviously, with the pandemic going on for some time. But there are some shows, as we've mentioned before on this program, that are opening up for physical view. Our art insider, Lindsay Preston-Zappas, an editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles, has been keeping an eye on all that art, and she's here to tell us about a couple of new shows that you can check out right now. Hey, Lindsay.
Hello.
There are several new shows open right now, and you're going to tell us about one virtual one coming up and one show that we can go see in real life. So I guess we can start with the one that you can check out in person. Tell us about that one at the Parker Gallery.
Yeah, so this one just opened up on the 13th of September, and Parker Gallery is a really interesting space. It's actually set in a sort of Tudor-style house near Griffith Park. So the artist that they're showing there is Maya Peoples-Bright. The show at Parker is a retrospective of her work, and she primarily works in painting and ceramic. And it's just animals everywhere, covering every surface. And she calls animals beasties. And so it's this very endearing kind of phrase that she has for her animals.
Oh, I was checking out some of the photos, Lindsay. And as you mentioned, they're very brightly colored, a lot of animals, a lot of prints, right? A lot of spots, like here's a tiger with spots, and here's a giraffe, and, you know, those kinds of patterns that you see on animals. Her work seems to me to be so whimsical. Is that how you would describe the cornerstones? I mean, is that what she does?
Yeah, absolutely. And the artist herself, I have to tell you, Steve, was at the opening wearing head-to-toe hand-painted clothing that she had painted that was also covered in her animals. So it's very whimsical, super, you know, she leans into the sense of play. So she'll paint a landscape where each hillside is filled with a different animal. So it'll be geese on one hill and giraffes on the next one. There's a painting in the show that's called Goose Lady Godiva, where you see Lady Godiva kind of riding into town on a horse, but her skin is covered with geese. So it's almost like these geese tattoos. And then the horse she's riding on is made up of dozens of these kind of interlocking creatures. So you see fish and dogs and all these creatures kind of creating this horse. So yeah, it's super playful. Her language is also really playful. The title of the show is called Beautifowl, like fowl, like the animal. So she's really into alliterations and these kind of horrible puns, but they're awesome. There's one work that's called Laughing Owl, The Way to the Bank. So gives you a sense of kind of where she's at. Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of fun. All right, we mentioned there's another show, a virtual show over at Epic. Many galleries, obviously, are experimenting, exploring with their own online galleries as well. Lindsay, I mean, this particular exhibit seems a little different. Tell us about why this show is so unique.
Yeah, so I think we've talked through this pandemic, Steve, about how galleries are kind of switching to online exhibitions with sort of mixed success going online. And this gallery, Epic, actually started during the pandemic. And it was created by this artist, Peter Wu, really in response to the onslaught of kind of bad virtual art experiences. That's sort of how I'm reading the creation of this gallery. And he's done a handful of shows so far. And each one is a totally different VR setting. So a virtual reality setting that the artwork has then been kind of set into. So it really feels a lot more like a video game than a traditional gallery. So the current show is called Labyrinth. And Peter asked the artist Amir Nikravan to design the VR setting for this one. So if you go to the website, it's epic.gallery, and you click enter, and you kind of are in this world. And again, you're the video game character kind of navigating through this thing. And it's a sort of spiraling concrete maze that's set into the woods. And there's a really eerie kind of red glow to the whole thing that looks like it could be sunset. But also when I saw it, I was just thinking about the fires in California right now and this kind of red, smoky skies that we've all experienced. And then you just start navigating this maze looking for artwork that's installed along the way.
I mean, it actually sounds like something that could make you a little dizzy, right? I mean, if you're talking from a, right? Like if you're stationary looking, you know, in some sort of virtual reality as you're moving, it's almost like a point of view video game or something like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's so oppositional and different than the sort of standard typical art viewing experience, which is like a white wall gallery. You know, it's a sort of, quote, neutral space. So this is the total opposite of that. Like the experience of navigating through it, I think is almost more interesting and more important than the actual artwork inside the show, which is kind of interesting. So you get a little bit lost. You get a little claustrophobic. You maybe forgot to see one of the artworks that was kind of in the back of the maze and you didn't know how to kind of navigate to it. So it's a little bit more messy in that way.
Well, it sounds like there's a bit of a learning curve, right?
Sure. And you kind of learn how to navigate it. But to me, it's been one of the more successful online galleries in this time because it's interactive and it's surprising, you know, and it's not just trying to adapt something physical to online. It's sort of using that space to the best of its ability.
Lindsay Preston Zappas, our art insider, editor-in-chief over at Carla. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
I That's going to do it for us for now. Next week, we'll do you and democracy a solid with a deep dive into voting information and look at a proposition that could partially derail what's known as the third rail in politics. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Grab the podcast while you're there. Share your thoughts with us, too. What were you thinking about the pandemic 6 months ago? Did you think it was going to last this long? kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Kat Yore, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made this show happen tonight. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Stay safe. Have yourself a great night.